Hello and welcome to Reg Talks, the show where we unpack how regulation and technology are reshaping financial services in Asia and beyond. I'm your host, Klaus Christensen, CEO and co-founder of Know Your Customer. We're coming to you from the Money 2020 show floor in vibrant Bangkok. And today we're diving into the engine room of global commerce, corporate payments, and real-time cash management. My guest today is Rachel Whelan, Managing Director at Deutsche Bank, where she serves as APAC and MEA Head of Corporate Cash Management and Global Head of Payments and Transactional FX. From London to Singapore, Rachel has spent 26 years helping multinationals move money across the globe faster, safer, and smarter. Whether that's building 24/7 payment rails, rolling out instant settlement e-commerce solutions, or partnering with fintechs to take payments securely to the next stage of evolution. Thanks so much, Rachel, for coming on the Talk Podcast.
Thanks, Klaus. Thanks for the invite. Really happy to be here.
Great. You have 26 plus years of experience and lead Deutsche Bank's corporate cash management business across Asia Pacific, Middle East, and Africa. Huge area, huge job, and payments and TFX product management globally. Excellent. Can you share a bit about your journey? How did you get into this and what your role entails, especially when managing cash management across 18 very diverse and highly regulated markets?
Yeah, it's definitely, as we're just talking about, like my journey, I suppose, from a very small village in County Waterford in Ireland to where I am now sitting in Singapore. And I suppose the ownership and mandate that I have within Deutsche Bank, did I ever foresee it? No, never. Didn't even know really what a big bank looked like besides a kind of a retail bank in my early days. So those ways was the journey did take me. I think I was in the investment bank back in London and took a bit of a career break after a few years with Deutsche Bank and then ended up with Deutsche Bank back in Singapore. And I think that's when I kind of first in, I think it was 2011, got really introduced into the payments. And it was interesting because it was from sitting in the investment bank, literally going, our payments team are changing some payment stuff. We need to know what's going on. That was kind of the premise. And then subsequently got involved and moved into the corporate bank. And that's where I kind of got my first intro into even product management, which is now like the TFX product was my first product I took on. Owned it in APAC for about 4 years. It was the APAC head under the transactional FX product and then took on the global role. And that's where really I got into, you know, the payments and cross-currency payments. And I think it's now a number of years forward, I took on that payments role for Deutsche Bank. And I think I had said at the time, probably if you asked me a number of years ago, would I have taken on payments as a product? Because cross-currency payments, FX, you know, that's interesting and that's constantly changed. And I've owned that product and I will never give that product up because it's one of my babies. But then kind of the current situation with payments, like I never foresaw that. So when I took on like the global payments role 4 years ago, that was something I never thought I would do. And now I would say payments are sexy. So, but definitely they're complex. Yeah. And like coming from the investment bank, complex, you know, derivatives, contracts, structured deals. Yeah, there's so much risk, there's so much complexity, but payments just has just as much complexity. And now are foundational in terms of what they mean in terms of our clients. And ultimately that the payments requirements of our clients is that foundational part of helping them to do business and supporting them globally. So that then added with my cash management remit in, as you said, 18 now diverse countries, which I took on that role, I think the last 3 years, it fits nicely as two linked kind of things in terms of cash business. Key to our clients is a payments and CFX asks, and they're managing their risk globally from a cross-currency payment perspective is key to them. So for me, they sit nicely. I think we were talking earlier, again, now I also, from a senior female perspective in our organization, this is a big remit to have, very important. But I think it also helps to show that, you know, you can come from that small village in Ireland and grow up to be who I am. So, yeah, it's exciting. And yeah, as I said, payments are very exciting, but yeah, very complex space also to be in.
Yeah, I guess that journey, congrats to the journey. I guess the journey kind of mirrors also the increasing complexity of payments that in turn mirror the increasing complexities of the world of trading and commerce.
Oh, absolutely.
When you started, it wasn't probably all that complex
No.
As it is today.
Exactly. And if you like sit now and you kind of go, did I really know what was going on in the rest of the world when I sat? And now, absolutely. My, you know, my nieces, my nephews, they know what everything that's going on in the world. And I think that the world has become way smaller, but also then it becomes very complex in relation to what's going on. And like the current situation where one person's agenda can change and put things on a total flip in relation to what you planned yesterday is very different to today. And I think that's what our clients like are really dealing with on a real-time basis now. Supply chains, you know, we don't know what they will look like tomorrow. Yeah. So I think COVID was an interesting one because that changed stuff. We had 2 years. We had to re-baseline, you know, after COVID life. I was in Singapore. It was a good choice to be. You know, we kind of all forgot about it. But after that, we had to re-baseline what was the world then. And now even, you know, we were talking on Monday in our management meeting, even this first month, kind of what happened in the first quarter of this year, it's going to be very different to what happens in the second quarter of this year. So we're going to have to re-baseline again. I think that's why banks like ourselves, I think we're here. And I think that's where I would say from a Deutsche Bank perspective, we have a very strong presence in APAC. We do have people on the ground that know the local markets. And then we have a really good regional presence with lots of expertise across all of our products, of course, across like all of the client needs. And I think that's for me is the key thing is when we're doing this, when we look at what are we trying to solve for? You know, what does the client need? Because I think that's the other challenge we have is there's lots of new tech, new innovation that, yes, technically we can do, you know, we have really clever people. They can build anything. But do we need to? And why do we need to? So that's why you also have to go back and ask those questions. And that's where our clients are.
That's kind of a Steve Jobs approach to have that client journey in mind when you start. Yeah.
And we do it. Like, so we basically, like the way we build kind of product, and that's for me, I think the best benefit of my kind of job being the cash business head, I get to meet our clients and I get to talk to them. And yes, I'm there to support them in terms of their wider business needs. But then I can also talk about what are they trying to do? And I can extrapolate that quite quickly into, you know, what do I need to be thinking about in terms of what products we're providing and how we're providing to them in the future as well.
I'd say on a professional basis, like just you and me, the journey from, in my case, Hamburg in Germany through Ireland to Hong Kong, this background of switching cultures and going through different things actually keeps us on our toes and instills a certain flexibility that's probably extremely useful in these months now, in this year, these quarters that are upcoming where things are changed and chopped and changed again.
No, absolutely. My early days, I think, in London were very, very different. You know, sitting in the investment bank side of things, it was a different kind of complexity. You know, sitting in APAC for 18 years, I have like no reason to leave. It's a great place to be. It's a great place to live. But in terms of the learning that you can get, like the speed of change that's been driven in the markets in APAC and that complexity, you know, those restricted natures of the currencies that we've always dealt with, but the complexity then across the markets. And yes, we're not one currency, you know, so there is loads of learning. So like we advocate for people coming out, people spending some time in this region, you know, you get very resilient with because it is constant change. I think this latest one, I think people are struggling to model it a little bit, that risk, but otherwise it's another event that we have to help deal with and help our clients to understand. And I think that's where us staying as resilient as a trusted partner is very important.
Yeah. And especially being here in Bangkok, looking at the local scene here, there's a ton of interesting payment options and payment systems coming up here. To have the global ad here in Asia rather than in Europe or America absolutely makes sense. I remember really my astonishment and how far they were. In 2015, I believe I was, just when we founded KYC, I was in Shanghai. And a friendly company, I was sharing offices there for just a little co-working kind of thing. And we went out for lunch. And one person paid, and they all paid them back through WeChat Pay. And that 2015, I didn't know this sort of thing. We didn't have it in Europe. We're only catching up there, like Revolut or the faster payment systems on that kind of side works well. But yeah, it's catching up and it's only fitting to be here in Asia where things happen.
No, absolutely. So in my example, I pretty much use the learnings of what is happening in India. to also drive how we're building like our whole instant payment rails. I've been traveling in and out of India for a number of years, and the last time I was back after COVID, it was totally changed. And again, going back to the reason to do, so the regulator really wanted to, you know, it's about banking the unbanked and ultimately supporting that for financial inclusion was a big agenda on that. So you can see it. It was real reason for to do and ultimately pushed forward by the regulators there. So yeah, that was a really good example. But then also they're quite innovative. And the regulators does hold a good hand on keeping the market secure, which is also very important.
Like, I'm deviating a bit from questions I have here. If we're chatting, I think we should do that, because there's the next thing that just came up. You mentioned India, and I don't have much experience there at all. Like, done a lot of countries here in Asia and Europe, but not India so much. So India is probably very interesting in terms of leveling the playing field for less banked or disadvantaged parts of the population. Do you see that happening through technology, through your involvement there, SMEs, small businesses and that?
Oh, absolutely. So like, I think we have the last conversation I had with a client over there was about small business loans. So they're being able to disperse those instantly. So small business or store, small retail loans, being able to real-time disbursement. So actually setting up a whole structure that have a distribution model through platforms that then they kind of get KYC'd on the platforms, and then you ultimately can, you know, sign up straight away and the funds are dispersed over instant rails, yeah, real time, so the person has it and commit. And like, even things like some of the capabilities that we built over the years in relation to how we've integrated the instant payments rails. And this is where you go to the B2B2C type of model. And that's where we're not a retail, but we are a retail bank in India, but I don't own that piece of the kind of business. But generally, we're not a retail bank in APAC. So for us to be able to see how it's impacting the kind of end consumer, like you were asking, we have definitely been working with our corporate clients and in terms of how they've been differentiating how they work there with their end clients. And one example is when, you know, oil prices went considerably up, we were helping a corporate client who owns his taxi company, large taxi companies or large, you know, mobility companies, to disperse the actual funds that these drivers were getting paid real time so that they could go around the corner and fill back up again. Yeah. And then take their next journey. So this is like literally real tangible kind of outcomes of the usage of, I think, of instant payments and connectivity.
Well, I firmly believe that the technology that we are introducing here does help to equalize playing field there to a degree as far as we can, and not even make it even harder to catch up. Anyway, let's get back to a couple of questions there. The whole cross-border payments is interesting. So Deutsche Bank is a major player in corporate payments globally. How's a bank driving innovation in cross-border payments, cash management, particularly in Asia? You already mentioned one there with India. Is there any new solutions or initiatives that are interesting to learn about?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of different initiatives going on in the market. And obviously, we all know that like SWIFT is the cross-border payments network right now. Yeah. But there is definitely a lot of initiatives around bringing instant schemes together. And one of the ones that we're now working with the BIS and Nexus project in the region, we're at Deutsche Bank. And again, we're not, so in the first stages, we were not necessarily fully involved in that because it's a retail, really a retail initiative. And you saw it in Singapore, they connected PromptPay. So on my app, my banking app, I can do a PromptPay payment. And like, I can use it here, I can use it in Singapore. So same thing, they connect. So these were all point-to-point connections. So now Nexus looks at providing that network, so a bit of a kind of a middle network, which then also should resolve some of the
non-standard. Can you explain a bit about Nexus?
So Nexus is connecting multiple instant payment schemes.
Oh, right.
Rails.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, so that's what that is. So that starts to help you with some of that. But again, that becomes an alternative on the cross-border, cross-currency requirements. But I would say in the interim, because this is not ready. So I think in the interim, what we've been doing is we've been connecting for our clients where they've got their clients wanting to do business in another market. They need to collect onshore in another market. They want to ensure that the consumer is able to pay in their local currency. We all feel comfortable paying in our own local currency. So that collection then into local currency because it becomes complex for that client to then, because they need that funds back to actually pay then the merchant, the seller. And that seller needs it in a different currency. And those are not easy setups in APEC because you need documentation and you have to, it's proof of payment and stuff like this. So we ultimately have built solutions where we brought together multiple parts of our kind of product capabilities and we've joined them together into an end-to-end kind of integrated solution for our clients where that becomes near instant. Like that's how it's been described by some of our clients because we've been able to collect, we've been able to, from a regulatory and compliance perspective locally, what documentation do you need? We've digitized some of that. We've brought that then together. We've then applied the FX and then we've moved the money to offshore and then allowed to be paid out to their merchant.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the history why Deutsche Bank has grown this so much? Because I obviously, as originally German, left it 20 years ago, but I banked with Deutsche Bank. I did. I still have a Deutsche Bank account. But of course, I knew them as like the preeminent business bank there in Germany and also retail bank. But this business is huge here. And how did they decide to do that over here?
So I think it's a multiple of things. Like for me, in what I've been involved in since kind of those years when I took on the cross-border product, my FX for cash product is called TFX, cross-currency product. Yeah. Well, one of the first things we did was to put in place bringing that in-house. So what I mean by bringing us, where we basically, we have a joint venture across our markets business and our corporate bank business, and we bring the kind of FX and the cross-currency requirements together. And obviously the actual, need is a cross-currency payment that our client needs to make. And we roll that out across APAC. I think the foundations is building kind of consistent products in the markets. Yes. So these products are in all markets. And then we have a really strong cash management presence. And again, we don't have loads of branches in every country, but we then use our local partners and we work with our local partners to kind of help us do that local collection and the kind of last mile elements of it. And we bring that combination then of having a very strong cash management presence, very strong kind of FX presence in market, which are two of the very key capabilities you need to do some of this business. And then with us also then focusing really on our liquidity side of the business, which was something we were a little bit slower to come to market, but now we have a really strong liquidity offering when we brought them all together. And I think that's the thing. So again, I think also the change, I think, in how you approach and work with clients. Clients don't want you to go and, and sell one product. This is not a retail exchange. Yeah? We're not just transacting a cup of coffee. Like, it is something that where you have to build a solution with the different capabilities. And I think that's where now our real strong and use case is, and our USP is that where we have teams that really get in and talk to clients, whiteboard with clients, understand exactly their needs, because not every client is the same and every client does it differently. So we're able to get that intel. And then, we kind of take the different capabilities and we plug them together. But that foundation is off the same technology stack that we kind of built that FX product offering. So that's why I kind of talked about that first, because that is the foundation that we've built that end-to-end workflow solution kind of capability to.
On a meta level, to me, that sounds like you build a very strong foundation. You build a package of products. This sounds like a counter-argument. This success sounds like a counter-argument to the idea that was floating around quite a long time when virtual banks came up and the whole open banking thing, that all the functions that were currently in one house and one bank would be disintermediated and distributed over different entities because they didn't really have an advantage, but they seem to do have an advantage. It's better to have these things combined.
Yeah. No. And again, and like even now at our next stage, I think of kind of building out our capabilities, like we're on a journey around building out our payment, transforming our whole payment, basically transforming kind of some of our legacy cash, basically technology. Yeah. And even as part of that, there's the whole concept of microservices. And these are what they are. These are the capabilities, yeah? And that's the thing. So instead of that big bank in a box, you're now able to take those different services and actually join them together, yeah?
You're describing it like foreign IT person, like me. Very good.
Oh no. So my payments IT person that owns our new payment that works with us and we're building out our payment landscape. Yes, he does tell me that I'm quite a tech savvy business person. So no, I like to understand it. For me, it's very important to understand the technology. Again, as I said, you can build anything, but should we? And
Yes.
so the business overlay and the client need overlay is very important into that dialogue, but then also knowing what we're building and making sure that the technology is safe and sound. That's a key need for our clients.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and like the person who's heading all that does need to be the bridge between the tech and the business world or the customer's world.
Sally.
Absolutely. We don't have that much time left, but let's go to some other questions. Obviously, for us, it's always interesting. One thing, I had a talk here during this event about fraud. That I think is fascinating and it's fast changing at this time. Remember last year there was this incident where a Hong Kong finance chief was enticed to wire 200 million Hong Kong dollars over by a fake Zoom call, like literally faking the CFO and everything. Incredible. So fraud prevention must be a big concern, payments world and probably also cash management. Are there any interesting tools and partnerships that Deutsche Bank is doing in that area?
So I think we've got multiple kind of conversations going on. But in terms of, I'd even start because I was thinking about this question. I would start like we're seeing fraud now in some of the really existing, the original payment types. So we see a lot of fraud in checks and stuff like this. So even taking it away from like using new tech, we're already trying to stop paper transactions and whether it's manual payments or checks, because that's where you're seeing some of this. So simplest, start using some of the technologies. So that's kind of where we're trying to help our clients to go on to platforms so that we have like, fraud detection capabilities in the platforms in the first instance, in the channels. The minute you have to hand information off between people, that starts to have its own possibilities of fraud. But then we are using our own technology and our own data. And I think this is a key one we have brought. Now we have a central payment data store that we've been building up to basically get all of our payment data in one place. And we're using that to also kind of identify. The other piece is we're working with a lot of providers now on building out the pre-validation capability. So
Yes.
that element of actually, I call it fail fast. So make sure the transaction is safe before it even gets into the pipe. And I think that for me is a very key for payments. And you do now see with the instant payment regulations in Europe pushing the need for a validation of payee. Yeah. So I think that has to be,
The ten second rule.
exactly. So the 10-second rule, but the 10-second rule actually conflicts against that, because if you want to do it in 10 seconds, then you're pushing the boundary on it being secure and safe. Yeah. Because you can't do all the checks and balances in 10 seconds. So you then kind of have to do a checks and balances up front. And then you basically have to give a network, which is a 10-second ecosystem of the instant payment network, to say, now you are safe, secure parties that can actually participate on the network. So you can now participate in instant payments as a payment product because we class you as secure counterparties, secure kind of originator or payer counterparties. Like, I think that is an interesting one too. And I think that's where this validation of payee and confirmation of payee capability and technology we're working on. We've been building that out. And that's one of the areas that we're focusing on. And we will build it further as part of the regulations as well. And there's a number of different parties in different markets, including the likes of SWIFT, including the likes of EMAP, or ECB, including like the regulators actually kind of providing some of that, directly with other banks, actually taking that information as well and sharing that information so that we can kind of get a good guy, score check or good girl score check on the counterparties involved in the transactions.
Very smart. I like the ideas about having this data combined and in-house and having your own tools there. Because when I prepared for this talk about fraud, like in the end, I came to a few conclusions what you should do to get better there. And you already hit two. One of the things was the problem that currently fighting fraud often has is that large organizations operate often in these silos and everyone only sees one slice of the elephant and therefore never gets what's happening. And the other one was that criminals just like to deploy new software versions nightly and we wait for quarterly change management and so on. If you can do stuff in your own organization without going through long processes, that's
No. And now we do use now like robotics and stuff like that. So once you kind of get the, once you can do the multiple kind of hits or multiple identifications, then person goes on a, you know, good guy or bad guy, you know what I mean? Automatically. And that is because I think since, like, we saw definitely, I think where we saw the Ukraine war, I think that was where we definitely saw sanctions just went mad. That was the first time. Nobody knew what SWIFT was. Now my family know what SWIFT was because it was quite funny, but not funny, you know. But now like lists get changed, like on a much regular basis. So then therefore you also need to be then updating, you know, those with good guys, Matt. So, and then you start getting into the instant payment nature. We need to be doing it as near real time as possible.
It's certainly a new world.
Yeah.
One thing dear to my heart, since we're in the vendor space, we are no longer really a startup 10 years in the business, but how do you work with fintechs and small organizations? We've seen banks partner with fintechs to enhance services. Vendors, of course, like startups there. How is that going for Deutsche Bank? Or do you just build everything in-house?
To be honest, and this is the transition, I think, if I go back to, like, especially from a product side of it, the FX product that I own, the cross-currency product I've owned for a few years, that was all built in-house, all in-house. And a really great product that you could turn around and capabilities and new, you know, you came up very, very quickly. Then I looked at the payments that I took on, the payments kind of things that I took it on 4 years ago. It's all vendors. It was all kind of outsourced. And that's definitely what we're changing. So we're building all of our new payment technology and our payment network in-house.
Which doesn't mean you don't use tools.
No. Exactly. You know? Going back to the comment around the services, so now I can use services.
Microservices, exactly. There you go.
Microservices from fintechs or for the right needs. Going back to the validation piece, these are then embedded into our processing. So I keep the key kind of intellectual property in relation to the payment, the end-to-end payment, the data, and also I bring it all together. So that lineage of a transaction, I can see from the point of entry, you know, the client sending me the payment, how it's processed through our systems, how I can provide updates in terms of where that transaction is, and then also that going out into the clearing side of it. The last mile connections, definitely there's no real differentiation there, so that we're definitely using partners for, and for me that's key. Then they keep me updated with local regulations and stuff like that, because we all have to do that. So
we haven't even discussed regulations, but we can't really come to it anymore. Because it's almost
running
time
out of time.
A couple of questions, we do it quick. Any future trends and strategy, what's on the horizon for you, as almost last question?
So at the moment, I think we're really looking at, again, as I said, the Nexus, like global instant, And again, as the instant rails open up for the one leg out concept, where we can actually do
pre-validate,
then be able to actually send, say, a euro into India, converted, but euro on an instant payment rail, separate instant, and then a UPI. So we're looking at all of that. 24/7 is another one that we're looking and spending a lot of time with our clients on. Again, it's always driven, what we're kind of looking at is very driven by the client demand, but also staying very close to what's going on in the market. So I think they're two of the key ones. How can I roll out the instant kind of rails? Where at the moment we're rolling out our PIX rails in Brazil and multiple other kind of rails. The challenge is doing this innovation while the regulations keep changing. So like we're very much a lot of ISO regulations, which is great because it's message form data, you know, it will benefit us in the long run, and it'll benefit our clients in the long run, having standard message protocols and then data. And again, it will benefit fraud and other kind of security elements of kind of the end-to-end flow. But generally what we try to get is a two for one, where we have a regulatory change that we also try and innovate some of our capabilities at the same time. But I think payments are just going to be, they are going to be embedded everywhere, you know, pay by link, pay by QR code, point of sale, all of us are using, you know, cards, we're using our phones.
Globally connected.
Globally, exactly.
Seamless FX.
Exactly. Exactly. In a secure, stable way for our clients and for ourselves. We want to make sure that, you know, what we're doing is safe as well. But yes, it's very interesting. It's like there's so much. It's very exciting space to be in with so much going on.
Well, we'll help on the fraud and money laundering side. So last question, I have all my guests will answer. If you woke up tomorrow and you had sweeping powers as a new global regulator, what would be your first thing to do?
Yeah, so I did think about this, and I am sitting in payments and I know how complex it is. So I think that one would have been a big challenge to take on. So I'm not naive enough to necessarily think that I could solve that even if I'm a global regulator. But the one for me that is key at the moment is basically the regulating and governing the use of AI and new emerging tech. establishes an ethical and business benefit or client benefit, ensuring that it has been utilized for the right reasons. Yeah. And I think that's very key, because I think it is like we've seen this pace of change of tech. Like, it's just accelerating. And now I feel this is kind of a little bit, you know, it's moving too quickly. So we need some really young, clever kids that, like, you know, are coming new into this, and they want to make sure that the world they live in is safe and secure for people. And I do see this. I would like to be able to make sure that that happens if I was, because I do think there's benefits, absolute benefits, and we can all benefit from it. But as you said, the Zoom call that had a person implementation, it's scary. It's a little bit scary.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a great world that's opening up, and we will put controls in place, and it's a great thought. Rachel, this has been so much fun. Actually, this was the podcast out of my 50 or so where we went off script the most. Love it.
Yeah, no, we had a set of questions. I don't think we're talking about any of them.
Not even half.
No, but it's lovely.
We could go on. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Klaus. This has been very, very lovely. So thank you. And look forward to working together.
Yes,
well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rec Talks. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RegTech provider Know Your Customer. If you liked the episode, please subscribe to the whole series and leave us a review. And if you'd like to connect with us, suggest a guest or a topic for an upcoming episode, please send us a message at info@knowyourcustomer.com or visit knowyourcustomer.com/regtalks.